Well, we have arrived at the sixth and final chapter today and next Sunday, and then we will have become experts on the letter to the Galatians. Well, at least introduced to the letter to the Galatians. So we've had a number of segments in the middle part with a lot of doctrines about incarnation and redemption and so on and so forth. This last chapter now is a whole series of very practical ethical directions. It's a whole list of them. But we're not going to do all 5,000 here. And then it ends with a blessing with a benediction. All right, so let's hear what the Spirit is saying to the church here in this sixth chapter here. My friends, if anyone is detected of a transgression or aware of wrongdoing, you who have received the Spirit are supposed to restore such people in a spirit of gentleness. So take care that you yourselves also are not tempted. Now, bear with one another's burdens. So it is important to underline that the Greek word here is bare. So a simple mnemonic here is to think of a barbell with huge weights on each end, right? So that's a very, very heavy load. That's what the bare is. Bear one another's burdens, their great weights, their heavy loads that are weighing them down. And in this way, you will fulfill the law of Christ. The word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God.
So this sixth chapter has a whole list of do's and don'ts, if you will, that fit within the Christian parameters. So let's focus just on the bear one another's burdens here. It has some things succeeding, some things following, but let's begin there. Bearing one another's burdens. So who is to bear another's burdens? So that's good. That's a simple question, simple answer, everybody. So all means all is to bear other people's burdens. So now that we're in the game here. So second question is, okay, what kind of burdens are we to bear? What kinds of burdens are we to empathize with, to kind of stand with people? All right, there's a long list, a very long, long list here of different afflictions, adversities, albatrosses, anything you can go from A to Z. Probably at the top of almost every stressor list, as you will see, the death of a spouse or a very intimate relationship. Because, obviously, the closeness is such that people's lives are intertwined, overlapping in all sorts of different ways. And so when one person dies, a part of that person also kind of dies simultaneously. So that's a big, big burden to bear. And some of you have had experiences with that, and you can attest to the huge weight that descends. Okay, so in fact, pretty much anything with any intimate relationship, any partnership, is always going to have stresses and strains, ups and downs, things to negotiate. And then if there happen to be strains such that there is separation or there is divorce, that's going to be a big burden there. Unemployment, underemployment, laid off, furloughed, fired, whatever it is. Those create all sorts of burdens because now they call into question people's identity, who they are, as well as their self-worth. Relocating. I don't know how many of you have moved, but if you have ever tried to move, that's going to test a marriage from A to Z. And if you do it once, you don't ever want to do it a second time. That is a big, big stressor. We've got the kind of garden variety here of emotional distresses, emotional burdens, whether they're depression, whether they're anxieties, whether they're anger, whether they're self-worth, okay? You got a whole bunch of those types of things going. Financial obligations. They've increased. There's more to go out than there is coming in. Another burden. It's just all sorts of bricks that pile on. So that word bare that is used in the text there, these are burdens that not just weigh you down, they can crush you. Yep. All sorts of, there's just a whole menu there. It goes on and on and on and on and on. Now, what's interesting is there's a lot of burdens out there that we don't think of as burdens. And a lot of times we think of, oh, well, that's a joy to celebrate. Congratulations. It's wonderful, fabulous. Like a job promotion. Tremendous. Yeah, okay. New and perhaps more challenging and perhaps ominous responsibilities. Anxiety writ large. That's the burden. It's going to have to be a period of adjustment, clearly. How about a teenager who moves out of the home nest to college? Oh, isn't this just wonderful and great? Yeah, great. Yeah, okay, that's called crying in the back seat of a car all the way home. That's a big burden to adjust to. There's been 17, 18, 19 years, and that relationship has now shifted dramatically. So, which burden are you bearing? We all have at least one of these burdens. Some of us have several. So now we've got everybody is to bear one another's burdens, and everybody's got at least one. And if we don't have one that's mentioned, there's a whole list of others that I'm sure that you've been able to check off on the list. Some of these burdens come and go at different times also, right? Maybe you resolve something, or maybe something is heavier at one point than it is another, or some are just ongoing. Now, what follows in that verse is bear one another's burdens, and then it talks about law. All right, so now we've been through this several times. The letter is written back to the churches of Galatia, which is, we're saying, central eastern Turkey. Churches that Paul established, right? He went away, he goes over to the western coast. He hears that things are now not going well, or at least in his opinion. Someone has distorted the gospel. Someone has twisted the gospel to convince the people back in the churches of Galatia that it isn't a matter of simply belief or grace or faith. It's a matter of you have to do something. You have to say something. You have to perform a work, a deed, in order to be receptive of God's grace. That's called the law. And we've identified the 613 commandments, of which we fail on at least 286. You have to fulfill all of those in order to become righteous. And we got all these abstract words we don't like to use. Righteousness. So Paul is trying to get a course correction here on law, 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 law. It's not law, it's grace. Then we got into that middle section about sin, and we got into redemption, and then we got into last week freedom. What are we free from? What are we free to do? Okay, now we're in this last section. We're all responsible. Yep, we're all called to be our brother's brother, our sister's sister. We're all called to stand with, empathize with, bond with. Everybody has a burden or several. So the only way we can make this work is if everybody does this together, and then you fulfill the law of Christ. It's a different understanding of the law, isn't it? So it isn't that all these commandments, do this, do this, don't do this, do this. It's the law of Christ is that he bore our burdens, and again, this is abstract. He bears all of our burdens in his love for us, and then we tell stories about the cross and passion and so on and so forth. That's the law that we're trying to fulfill. When you bear another's burden, you fulfill the law of Christ. That's grace. Then you experience grace, I should say. That's when you experience what it means to be righteous. You can't do something to become righteous. It is a gift. You can't do something to earn forgiveness. It is a gift. But you will experience that in such actions as A, bearing one another's burdens. Now, there's a whole lot more in the rest of chapter 6. So let's think about this way, because you always got to kind of concretize this stuff. 1969, good year. The amazing Mets, right? And Woodstock, 1969. You have to be over 34 or else, like, I don't know what he's talking about. 1969, Nina Simone, that's when she debuted her Young, Gifted, and Black, right? That was based on the Lorraine Hansberry autobiographical play from the year before. Lorraine Hansberry, who's Lorraine Hansberry? She is a woman from Chicago who at age 29 wrote a play that for the very first time was performed on Broadway by a black, an African-American woman. Never occurred before, age 29. Moreover, Hansberry won the New York Times Drama Critics Circle Award for Best Play 1959. Unheard of. So, first African-American dramatist to earn that award, and at age 29, the youngest. Keep in mind, it's not that long ago, but this is still Jim Crow era. Again, if you're over 34, you can resonate with, like, wow, there's still people running around in the dark of the night in sheets, okay, burning crosses. So this is a black woman who wins this award at age 29. 5 years later, so now she's 34, right? Her life is snuffed out by pancreatic cancer. Just before that, while she was going through whatever treatments they had, which are few, even today, there's just not a whole lot, she had met with a bunch of essay winners, these young black kids from New York City, in which she had said that she wanted to meet with them because they were young, gifted, and black. That became then the origin of the phrase for the autobiographical play that was written posthumously about Hansberry in 1968, and that Nina Simone then took for her song, Young, Gifted, and Black. Maybe you've heard it. It is one of the, quote, anthems of the civil rights movement, Young, Gifted, and Black. Hansberry. So what's this play? Okay, so the play comes from Langston Hughes, a poem called Harlem, A Dream Deferred. So what's a dream deferred? Is it like, does it dry up like a raisin in the sun? And that's where she titled it. She is from Chicago, South Chicago. And if you know anything about South Chicago, that is going to be a rather de-stressed and depressed area, especially if you are a minority. Her family grew up with all sorts of racial, not just segregation, even in the North, but discrimination. That family actually becomes a cause celeb because they are part of a case before the U.S. Supreme Court, Hansberry versus somebody, I forgot, Mills or something, about restrictive covenants. Restrictive covenants, they were common. They prohibited people of color or minorities from living in certain areas. So you as a seller of your property, you sign off and we're not going to sell to a black family. We're not going to sell to immigrants from Syria. We're not going to sell to Muslims. These are restrictive covenants. Isn't that illegal? Well, it wasn't then, okay? Not a political opinion. Not a political opinion, a statement of fact, okay? So Fred Trump, that's how they capitalized on making all their real estate in Brooklyn and Queens. The whole Trump enterprise was built on restrictive covenants to prohibit blacks, minorities, okay, anyone who wasn't white from being part of their real estate development, they used to call them dumps and stumps in Queens. That's the way they termed them, because they're built on piles and they were cheap housing. That became the cause under Donald Trump, the landmark federal case on restrictive covenants in the 1970s. And that's why there are no more restrictive covenants that are allowed. Okay? That's not a political opinion. I'm just trying to state a fact here. So there's background here. This is the world in which she grew up, and she writes this play about people having hopes and dreams, but they're deferred. And so what's going to happen to them? And so we get the raisin and the sun. So in this particular play, there is a family, the younger family, and they have dreams and hopes, but it's uphill. There's just a lot of things working against them. The father dies, but miraculously, he has a substantial life insurance policy. Wow. The dream deferred has now got a dream-based, a money-based reality to the dream. Because now there's going to be money for, well, the one daughter wants to go to medical school, and they want to move to another area, okay, where there are a better area, better this, better that. But, to borrow a phrase from Charles Dickens, Hard Times, we all have roses and thorns. Our lives are comprised of roses and thorns. But there are some people, for some strange reason, whether it's a mistake of the divine creator or just it's a happenstance, there are some people, it seems as though that their roses are somehow or other possessed by somebody else, and that their thorns are then possessed by the person whose roses have been stolen away, added on to their thorns. And so now we have people whose lives are thorns on top of thorns. All right, so we got the family going to cash in the money. The son decides to make it bigger. Oh, you see, we were back on that last week, weren't we? Whatever we have, we human beings want more. There's always something. It can get us to get a little bit or a lot of bit more. So he loses all the insurance money in a get-rich-quick scheme through his drinking buddy, which is actually a scam, and he swindles him. So now we got thorns on top of thorns. We got heavy burdens here. So there's a lot of angst here. Now, moreover, the neighborhood that they were going to move into was white. And this is the era of restrictive covenants. So a black family is unwelcome, unwanted, unacceptable. And to make sure that this black family, the younger family, knows this, the white families bond together and they hire an attorney to go tell the younger family, Walter, okay, that they're going to have to take the money. They're going to offer them the money back with an exchanged promise that they will not move into the neighborhood. So they're going to have to demean themselves, right? All right, so now there's a lot of tension here. And so the mother and one of the daughters, B, are arguing back and forth about what Walter is going to do. Walter has decided that he's going to do that. He's going to accept the white people's bribe, and he's going to take the money back and let things be the way they are. So B, the daughter, she says, "He's no brother of mine. What you say to mama?" "I said," said B, "that man in that room, he ain't no brother of mine." "I thought that's what you said," said mama. "You feeling better about yourself today than he? What you say about him, that he ain't a man? You done wrote his epitaph like the rest of the world. Who give you the privilege? Stand by me, mama, for once. You see what he's going to do, down on his knees. Did you teach me to despise any man who would ever do that, what he's going to go do to them whites?" Yeah, I taught you that, me and your daddy. But I think I also taught you something else, too. Didn't I teach you to love him? Love him? There's nothing left to love. There's always something left to love. And if you ain't learned that, you ain't learned nothing. Did you cry for that boy today? Not for yourself. Not for the family because he lost the money. You cry for him, all he'd been through and what's been done to him? Child, when do you think the best time is to love somebody? When they've done something good and make things easy? Now then you ain't learned enough. That's not the time at all. The time is when he's at his lowest. He can't believe in himself because of what the world's whipped up of so. Child, when you're going to start measuring people, measure right. Measure right, child. Make sure you've done taking into account all the hills and the valleys, all the burdens that he's come through whenever he gets to you. Bear one another's burdens. Everybody's got a burden, or two, or three. Stand with, support, embrace, empathize. Be one, sisters and brothers, one family on the face of the earth. Let us build a house in the name of Christ.